Glad everybody joined us today. Today you're in for a treat. Could be a couple of reasons. One, I'm out and Ryan is going solo because I had another commitment. Or preferably, you'll all miss me and you'll be in for a treat because of our guest, Dr. Amy Berry. She has over 20 years of experience working in education as a teacher, researcher, and professional learning facilitator. She's a research fellow with the Australian Council for Educational Research and an honorary fellow at the University of Melbourne. Amy was a teacher in Queensland, Australia for 10 years before returning to university to pursue her interest in educational research and teacher professional learning. She has extensive experience working with pre-service and practicing teachers to develop their skills and improve their practice. She has designed and facilitated numerous professional learning programs for teachers, including programs on formative assessment, student engagement, and learning through play. As well as working with teachers in Australia, Amy has worked with teachers, school leaders, and education officials from the U.S., Saudi Arabia, Singapore, Indonesia, the Philippines, and Ukraine. She is passionate about helping learners of all ages find their joy in learning. Amy holds a bachelor's degree in sociology from the University of California, Santa Barbara, a master's degree in education from the University of Melbourne, and a PhD in education from the University of Melbourne, where she studied teacher perspectives on student engagement. This research led her to develop the Continuum of Engagement featured in her book, Reimagining Student Engagement. The Continuum has also featured in a number of other books, including Visible Learning, the sequel by John Hattie. Enjoy the show.
Welcome to The Peg Doesn't Fit, the podcast that brings you the change makers in education. Tune in to hear from educational leaders who aren't content with the status quo educational model and are blazing their own path. Welcome, everybody. Today we have Dr. Amy Berry on the show. I am going solo. This, again, is Ryan. Eric is pursuing other events this evening. He had some family things to deal with, and that's all right. I am looking forward to this interview tonight, or this dialogue. It should be fun. We're talking about student engagement, and we have somebody who's actually spent their work. Well, can you say life's work? We'll give you a chance to tell us about this. Amy, but you've spent a lot of time studying what student engagement looks like. And I think as a teacher, I'm a former teacher, now principal, but we can all resonate with this. How do I get my students to engage? So we're going to kick it off with our first favorite question. Tell us about your educational journey. How did you get to being an author right now with a doctorate, with an experience in engagement? Tell us how you arrived here.
Okay, well, the two kind of go together. So a lot of people always ask me, how did you get interested in student engagement? And my interest began over two decades ago, which is a little bit frightening to say, when I found myself working in a local high school running the Naughty Kids Room. Yeah. And of course, it wasn't officially called the Naughty Kids Room, and it was officially called the Responsible Thinking Classroom. And every time I say that in front of a group of teachers, you hear a giggle across the room, because, of course, we know there was very little responsible thinking, which is why they ended up in my room. Right. And when I was working in that space, every lesson started the same. So the lesson would start with me having an empty classroom. Peaceful, quiet, calm, and slowly it would fill up as one by one the kids got sent out of their classrooms for refusing to comply with whatever it was the teacher wanted them to do, and into my classroom to reflect on their probably lack of responsible thinking, their poor choices.
Yeah.
And a lot of the kids would arrive at my doorstep just full of frustration and anger and rage at the injustice of it all. And you would frequently hear them say things like, oh, he's got it in for me, miss, or she's always picking on me. But some of them would almost skip through the door, big smile on their face after having achieved their goal of escape from the classroom. Yeah. And I found it a really fascinating and eye-opening experience. And if you fast forward about a year, I found myself in a different role in the school. This time I was working in the learning support team. So it was a different room. It was a different focus. Instead of focusing on a failure to behave in a certain way, now we were focusing on a failure to progress in a certain way, a failure to meet specific standards that had been set. And so while the room was different and while the focus was different, after a couple of weeks, I soon realized the faces were all too familiar to me, right? It was the same clientele. And this really struck me. It was a real eye-opener. And it's remained one of those pivotal experiences in my life, you know, to this day. And that's really where my interest began. And I thought, what is going on here? We have to do better than this. You know, school, it should be a place where everybody feels like they belong and feels like they can be successful. Learning is not just the domain of a few. Everyone is capable of learning and should feel like they are capable of learning and can be successful. But this is not what was happening. So I think it was such an eye-opener for me because, like many of your listeners, probably many teachers were pretty good at school, you know. Mm-hmm. And so for me, school was a daily reminder of my success. And it was a place that I felt like I belonged to, but not for these kids. For these kids, it really was a daily battle over compliance and a daily reminder of their failings. Mm-hmm. So I decided, okay, well, I need to do something about this. I need to get out of these spaces and really get in the classroom and get moving with it. But I think maybe high school, maybe it's too late. Maybe I need to, get them a bit younger. So I went down and started teaching. I call it primary school down here, but elementary school. And I taught sixth grade and then fourth grade and second grade and finally found myself as a kindergarten teacher. No lower to go unless I'm going to jump ship and go down to preschool. And I was getting pretty burnt out by that time and disillusioned, as many teachers, you know, find themselves after a while. And I thought, well, hang on, maybe I'm barking up the wrong tree. You know, maybe one person trying to change the experience of just a small handful of kids that happen to be in their class isn't the right way to go about it. And certainly fixing kids is not the right approach either. Mm. What needs to happen is I need to go way back up the chain and try to make a difference way farther up, you know, at the kind of system level to make this change. So I ended up at Melbourne University doing my PhD under John Hattie was my supervisor there. Mm-hmm. And together, you know, we were really interested in this idea of engagement and why after several decades of trying to improve student engagement, we are no farther along than when we started.
How lucky are you, like, to connect with John? Did you seek that out or was that pure coincidence?
I did. I mean, like most things in my life, I don't have a massive plan. I just seize opportunities as they come up. So, you know, I never planned on going back to graduate school. In fact, I had a friend that said, oh, I'm going to go and do my master's. And I said to her at the time, I was teaching kindergarten at that point, and I said, oh, I can't think of anything worse. Going back to university, oh, no way, I wouldn't do that. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, there I was finding myself there. And I kind of fell into the research while I was doing my master's. I did my research. And I decided I really liked research. I found it fascinating and fun. It gave me a new enthusiasm for education. And but I needed a supervisor for my PhD work. And so I emailed John. At the time, he was the dean of the graduate school. And I thought, well, I've got nothing to lose. You know, I mean, he can just ignore me. And that's probably what will happen. But he didn't ignore me. He said, come on in and meet with me. And I pitched him my ideas and he was interested. Of course, he has a vetting process, you know, so he's, you know, I want to see your writing. I want to see your design. I want to see all of that. But it was a fantastic experience to work with him. And I, you know, I'm grateful because I remain connected to him. He's probably the biggest champion of my work and the reason why it got out in the public space and didn't just get buried in some PhD thesis somewhere.
That's awesome. And nice that he's, you know, I'm sure he has become only more busy as his research and the name associated with his research expands. And so that's great that he's able to maintain that connection with you as well.
You know, it really is a good example of how someone supports the engagement of a learner. Yeah. You know, I mean, he didn't come in and tell me what to do. He didn't micromanage me. He got invested and interested in what I was interested in, what my passions were, and all along the way and to this day continues to say, how can I help? What can I do? Have you thought about this? So I think that's a good example for all of us as teachers to model ourselves off of.
Thinking of my question I was thinking of asking was about that room, but you kind of answered that. But I think about that ritualized battle for compliance that I feel like we have. And I've even had a conversation about this today. We're out of session, but even the teachers that came in, we're thinking about next year. It's like, what elements of compliance, are there elements that are necessary? Would you say that compliance is never the goal? I don't know. Like, where do you find yourself now? If you call it a spectrum, I guess, where do you find yourself on that spectrum?
So the book that I wrote was titled Reimagining Student Engagement. And I knew I had to start there because for most people that work in schools and in education, that's the term they're familiar with, student engagement. Mm-hmm. Now, by the time I came to write the book, my thinking had already started to shift a bit, thinking, well, I think maybe this is part of the problem, that instead of focusing on learner engagement, we're kind of lumbered with this term of student engagement, and it brings with it a whole bunch of problems having to do with compliance. So when generally two things. One, whenever I start talking to teachers, I always begin by asking them to remember a time recently where their learners were really engaged in learning something, like really into it. And, you know, what did it look like? What did it sound like? What was it about that experience that was so engaging? And I do that on purpose so that we can get our mind in the right space. This is what we are aiming for. When we think about wanting to improve engagement, that should be our goal, that kind of engagement. Unfortunately, what happens is often when we're talking about engagement, we get distracted and we start talking about compliance, attendance, behavior referrals to the office. Are they on task and getting their work done? You know, are they following the rules? Are they causing disruptions? We go down this whole pathway and all we end up talking about is compliance and we never get to the learning part. Mm-hmm. So now I'm kind of shifting away from the term student engagement, and my work now really focuses on learner engagement because it broadens our thinking out now. It helps us to disentangle the compliance aspects, which are important parts of our job as a teacher, right? We can't have chaos in our classrooms. It needs to be a well-structured and organized space if we're going to have any teaching and learning happening. But that's not the same thing as promoting engagement. That's just, you know, basic classroom management, and that needs to happen. So, the other reason why I like to expand out to learner engagement is now we can start to position ourselves as educators as learners as well. And we need to be engaged as much as our students need to be engaged. We can't get stuck in compliance mode either and just going through the motions of doing school, because that's not going to work.
It's interesting too, I resonate with that as being a teacher sitting in professional development sessions, and how compliant are they expecting me to be? Now I'm on the principal end of that and thinking, how do I engage my teachers so that they don't feel like they just have to be compliant? It really does run that full gamut. And I think, I don't know what you would say to it. Sometimes I think here's the problem almost, is that we think almost like when your parents too, like, yeah, but I don't have to because I'm the adult. Do you ever bump up against thinking like that?
I do, although they're often too embarrassed to say it. Mm-hmm. I know they're thinking it. But that, you know, right, it's not socially acceptable to say that when you're sitting in a professional learning experience, you know, with someone who's come in. But I know that thinking is there. I guess the problem with focusing on compliance for me is it's very easy, once you've got a certain skill set, it's very easy to sit in compliance mode and remain completely disengaged from what's happening. So part of, you know, the big piece of my work that came out of the PhD research was the engagement continuum. Okay. Now, the language of engagement that exists in most schools is pretty simple. It's engaged and disengaged. And there's not much beyond that. Those are the kind of terms that we tend to stick to. And they cover, you know, a range of different things. So there's a real lack of clarity about what we mean when we say we want our kids to be more engaged. That's great. Everybody agrees on that. But what does that mean? What does that look like?
Yeah.
So the continuum, I think, provides us with a good foundation for a better vocabulary, a better language for engagement. And we really need that if we're going to get anywhere. Mm-hmm. Now, in the continuum, we have three forms of engagement: participating, investing, and driving, and three forms of disengagement: withdrawing, avoiding, and disrupting. And they both range from passive forms to more active forms. Now, when it comes to compliance, it's really easy, once you've got a certain level of skill, to be completely disengaged, but also appear to be completely compliant.
Yes.
And I just sit in that withdrawing space. And this is what a lot of teachers can do in PD sessions, right? Because we're really good. By the time we're adults, we're great at flying under the radar if we want to. Mm-hmm. We can be nodding. We can be looking at you. We even look like we might be taking notes and doing something. We are not paying any attention. We're planning our shopping list. We're thinking about what we got to get ready for next week. So, and kids, as they get older, become much more skillful at flying under the radar, too. You know, in kindergarten, they don't have as many skills at flying under the radar, so they're a bit easier to spot when they're disengaged. But as they get older, they start to develop those skills. So kids can be, on the surface, quite successful at doing school, not getting in trouble, going through the motions, ticking the boxes, but actually learning not a whole lot in the process, and certainly not being set up for success beyond school and outside of school, because they haven't learned how to move beyond passive compliance. Tell me what to do and I'll do it.
So do you feel like some of it? So I love this. I took a screenshot out of your book already, because I was like, I have to show everyone this. It helps so much. It sounds like you're saying you also have to help kids almost learn where they're at on that spectrum and give them the skills to move to the more active element, as well as teachers. Like, not just teachers, I need to diagnose this, look at my continuum. Yes. Okay, this child looks like they're investing, this child looks like they're avoiding, here are my steps. I hear you saying that's one of the elements, but are you also saying it's good for the kids to know where they're at?
Absolutely. So when I think of it as there's two foundational building blocks that we need to get in place if we're going to get anywhere. One is around this language. We have to have a better language so we can get into the habit of regularly talking about engagement in a meaningful way. And the other thing about language is it, you know, it gives us some clarity about what it is we're trying to achieve. Our goalpost is a little bit clearer now when we see it in terms of driving as being the ultimate form, not just sitting your bum on the seat and doing what you're told. So I think that is the first foundational piece we have to get in place, is this language, or we can't really get anywhere. But equally as important is this idea of partnership. We have to stop battling with our students and thinking that it's all on our shoulders, that the responsibility for engagement rests with the teacher alone. Because again, we're not going to get very far if we try to do it all by ourselves. We like to actually, you know, and I don't blame teachers for getting this impression that it's all on us, because that is the message that is fed to them over and over again. You got to hook your students in. You got to get them engaged. You got to keep them engaged. You got to re-engage them. You know, all of this language says it's on me. It's all my job.
You're right. And like all of their training language as a teacher says, this is your job.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it implies, just through the words you're using, it implies students are naturally disconnected.
Yeah.
So it's only a battle that you're going into.
That's right. They're not capable of doing it themselves. So you got to move them around, like, you know, pieces on a chessboard or something.
Right.
Now, the problem with this thinking is that when it comes down to it, it's actually the student themselves that has to make the choice about whether they're going to engage in what we've had planned and to what extent they're going to engage or resist. Mm-hmm. And so we can, there are a number of things that we can certainly do as a teacher, you know, intentional moves that we can make to support engagement, but we can't do it all. We have to partner with them. Now, if we want to partner with them in a true way, then they need to learn the language too, mm-hmm. so that we can have conversations about engagement. Now, our goal here is, our ultimate goal here is to help them to develop the skills to be able to independently and effectively manage and regulate their own engagement. Mm-hmm. That's part of being a lifelong learner. If I'm going to be a lifelong learner, I need to have a deep understanding of the kinds of things that send me on a pathway of disengaging, that turn me off, and the kinds of things that make me want to engage, or the strategies that I can use to help me go from being, from saying, this is boring, I don't, you know, who cares, why bother, to, all right, I've got this strategy in my pocket to find my interest in this thing. So I don't rely on the teacher to say, this is boring, what are you going to do, you know, engage me, which is the attitude of a lot of students currently, mm-hmm. because they've also got the message that it's the teacher's job to engage them.
True. So I haven't finished your book yet, but for me and our listeners, is there a section in here in which it kind of helps provide those, that framework for how do you get a, the learner, the whether it's the student or the adult, to recognize where am I at on that continuum and what are my steps?
Yeah. So along with the two, you know, building blocks of language and this idea of partnership, mm-hmm. Is we have to have some sort of embedded and ongoing process in place so that engagement is not just this kind of add-on thing that we think about when we're planning or, you know, it's disconnected from the teaching and learning. Right. It's actually part of what we do every day. So okay. It's a process that we teach the students, and the way that we learn how to do this process is by doing it every day. We get better mm-hmm. at it by doing it. So it's very familiar to most teachers. It's a basic kind of inquiry sort of cycle around, you know, where am I at? Where do I want to get to? How am I going to get there? Checking in along the way to see if I'm on track for what I wanted, you know, where I wanted to get to, making adjustments, you know, and it's just like this ongoing thing. Now, an easy first step is to just start having conversations with your learners about engagement. You know, introduce them to the continuum, but not as a, here's the continuum, and then line under it, that's it. I'm going to slap it on the wall, and we're just going to point to it every now and again. Mm-hmm. It needs to be meaningful for both the teacher and the learners if it's really going to be powerful. So one of the things that I just did it on Friday with we had a group of about 200 educators that I worked with on Friday. And one of the things I like to do is say, right, I have given you some sample indicators of what each of the forms of engagement and disengagement looks like. But I never intended that that is the final word. They're just an idea to get you thinking about what that looks like.
Yeah.
What you want to do is take it and then sit down as a group and say, right, well, what does that look like with our learners in our classroom? When our learners are driving their learning, what are we looking at and seeing and hearing? And then it starts to come alive, and you start to have conversations across the staff so that we all get on the same page, so that when you say, I want my kids to get to driving, I know immediately what you mean, and, mm-hmm. and we're meaning the same thing. So we're starting to have some clarity across the school, and then we invite our learners to have their voice in there as well. Now, when I created the continuum, it is built on the experiences and descriptions of teachers. But, you know, this is a partnership, so we need to invite the voice of the learner in there as well. Now, I've got my current research project, and I'm about to head out into schools shortly to collect data, is just that, running a whole bunch of focus groups and surveys with K-12 students to get their voice in the continuum as well. What does it feel like? And what am I thinking when I'm driving and I'm investing or I'm deciding to withdraw or avoid? So that's the next piece of the puzzle for me. Now, I'm doing a research project on it, but there's nothing to stop an individual teacher but from finding out that information themselves. I always say, next time that you're on, we call it playground duty here, or yard duty, or recess duty, whatever, amuse yourself by walking around and having some conversations with your students and saying, hey, what does it mean to be a good learner at this school? What do good learners do? I'm doing a survey, you know. They will tell you some very insightful things about what they think good learners do.
I think you nailed it there. Even the questions I ask of kids, when they become disengaged, for one, is they, one of their main reasons is, well, they weren't doing anything in my classroom anyway. Like, what's wrong with me? Fill in the blank, whether it's talk to my neighbor, be on my phone. Like, they're aware of when, oftentimes, I take it with a grain of salt, sometimes I make it up, but that there are times where they're really right, where I'm not doing anything. I want to learn, but I see no value. Now, part of that is them also, they're not into that driving mode to be like, pause in the learning, what can I do to help my own learning, but still they're aware that there's a gap there, which I think is pretty cool. Like, I think we sometimes assume that the kids are awaiting the gap in the learning so that they can horse around. Mm. I don't even think that's always their goal. They're thinking, okay, I'm sitting here being compliant. I can't take it much longer. Now it's clear we're doing nothing. So, okay. You know?
Yeah. Well, that's right, because, you know, that's the reality for a lot of kids. That's their job. Sit around and wait for the teacher to be ready for them to move on to do something else.
Waiting,
you know,
input like a robot.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And, you know, one of the things that I always flag for teachers is, all well and good to go in and say, we want to develop this partnership with our students. Now, this is not going to happen overnight. OK, it's not an easy thing. And there will be roadblocks in our way on the side of both the students and on the side of the teachers. When it comes to our students, they will be at different levels of readiness to want to be an active partner in engagement. Right. A whole bunch of our students are going to be stuck in compliance mode. Mm-hmm. And they're stuck in compliance mode because they've been quite successful at being in compliance mode. You know, robo students going through the motions of doing school is what some researchers have termed it.
Yeah.
So when we're asking them to get out of compliance mode, we're asking them to take risks. We're asking them to work harder, think harder, risk failure. And so, you know, understandably, some of them are not going to want to do that.
Right. I think it's almost like you could call it a habit or a muscle that's formed or something like that. We actually had one of our brightest students this year. We experimented in a classroom with her where it was called Unified Science, but the philosophy behind that class period was going to be that you come up with something you're interested in and we can make it about science. So she took off with that at first. She's one of those very compliant students. And at first she kind of ran with it. She harvested apples from our orchard. She made apple cider vinegar. She researched other fermentation methods from the past. And we just incorporated chemistry into that. And then all of a sudden she was stuck and she said, I just want someone to tell me what to do now.
Oh, yeah.
I just want to sit and get answers out of a book.
Absolutely.
And not that that's bad, but you could almost see how like that rubber band was pulling her back in, or her old memory muscle ruts in her brain of thinking were like, I can't exist in this world too much. I got to get back on the path of compliance. And that was a very interesting thing to observe.
It is. And, you know, so, and sometimes, you know, we like to think that if we just give them more responsibility and more agency and freedom and all of that, that they're just going to grab it and run with it. And that's not the case. You know, It's like driving a car. You know, we don't just throw the key. You turn 16 or 17 and we throw the keys at you and say, rightio, well, you're of age. So off you go. Mm-hmm. You to drive. You have right. to learn how to drive. Mm-hmm. And our students are the same. School is not a great place for teaching kids how to learn. Yeah. It's a great place for teaching kids how to be compliant students. Mm-hmm. But it's they don't often learn how to learn. So that's our job, right? Our job is to help them to develop the skills to effectively drive. And while we're at it, we also need to teach them how to effectively participate and invest. We can't yeah. assume that they know how to participate, right? Participating, mm-hmm. participating is good. There are a lot of things about participating that are good for learning, being able to focus, being able to manage distractions, being right. able to manage your time and your resources, to be able to ask for help, know when you need help and ask for it. Mm-hmm. These are really important skills for learning, but we often assume that kids just come equipped with those and know how to do it. So you really need to focus and then, okay, what is that? Mm-hmm. So we need to be quite explicit about what skills our learners need to be able to successfully participate in the learning, to be able to successfully shift a gear and get into investing where I'm more interested and curious and involved, and then to be able to shift again into driving where now I've got a clear goal of what I want to do and a plan for how I'm going to get there, and I strategically seek feedback and I monitor how I'm going along the way and adjust when I need to, and I look for opportunities to collaborate with other people. These are things we can teach them.
Mm-hmm. Some of it sounds like too, I'm hearing, how do I also train my teachers to create the conditions and the learning environment for that too? And so it's a big mountain to move, but like you said, it's not going to happen overnight, but you can make that happen. I'm glad, too, that you went back to the source at the university, because I've also thought about just taking, I'm just thinking how big this issue is and how big the mountain is, because you think about just, I could think, here I am in Kansas, and I'm subject to all of, generally speaking, the training programs that happen at the local universities and colleges of the incoming teachers that are also stuck in a system that is really old and generally asking for compliance, even in college settings, teaching their kids that they need to expect to try to get compliance out of their kids. And then the bureaucratic structures that lie above that just in the state of Kansas that are incentivized by our federal government. And then I think, you're dealing with this in Australia. And so,
yeah, absolutely. You know,
it's just massive.
And,
so,
and you know, it's my other job. I'm a research fellow at the Australian Council for Educational Research as well. And so part of my work, most of my work there is to work in lower and middle income countries. Mm-hmm. So one of my main projects is the Learning Through Play at School study in Ukraine, and that's funded by the LEGO Foundation. It overlaps a lot with engagement, as you can imagine, so mm-hmm. there is an alignment there. But I'm often working in systems that are even more stuck and traditional than places like Australia and the U.S., so this is a global issue, okay? It transcends one country, it transcends one school, and that's why I like it as a focus, because everybody cares about engagement. It also transcends schools. You know, when we think about mm-hmm. the workplace, these same things apply in the workplace for teachers in their schools, but anybody working in a workplace and having to engage in learning as part of their work.
Yeah, I hear about how workplace less and less wants the compliant worker, yet we've just brainwashed them for 13 years to do that. And then we set Correct. Them free with no skills in how to function autonomously or, you know, think for themselves. And that's a huge yeah. challenge.
It is.
Do you have like model examples around the world? I mean, is this problem mostly within people that follow the traditional Prussian model of education like we do in the U.S., you know, sit at your desk and look forward and listen to the teacher kind of thing? Or are there, I had a guy on a long time ago from Acton Academy. I don't know if you've heard of that chain, but they seem to have captured even the Sudbury model in Massachusetts. Like, they seem to have captured an element of student engagement naturally through just doing things differently from the beginning. And I wonder if, like, they or other models are ones that we could point to and say, you know what, if you could flip public education on its head or traditional models on its head and look like this, you'd have higher engagement. You'd have more kids in the investing driving mode. Is that the case? I don't know.
Probably.
That was a long-winded question, but.
Yeah, I mean, probably. Yeah, I'm like you. That's why I love your podcast, too. I like to be inspired by the exceptions, you know, where mm-hmm. they're leading the way and showing that it is possible to do things differently and do things much better. Because yeah. for me, it's always gives me motivation. You know, we're back to motivation as a big part of engagement. Mm-hmm. It gives me motivation to keep going and not give up. Because sometimes I think, what am I doing? You know, is this even possible? Am I living in fantasy land? Maybe I'm just, you know, too far gone, you know, I'm not being realistic here. And people are going to say to me, oh, when's the last time you were in a classroom? So I like to remain connected to people who are actually doing this kind of stuff and seeing success to keep me motivated. Yes, it is possible. We need to keep going. No matter how hard, we have to keep going. So I remain persistently dissatisfied, but optimistic. Good. And I think that's what you have to be.
I'm typing that
if we're
in
going to get there
right now, so I always remember it. Persistently dissatisfied, but optimistic.
But optimistic. Now, when I was a teacher, I'm going to admit, I probably was persistently dissatisfied, but became pessimistic, you know, and it's easy to get worn down mm-hmm. when you're kind of caught up in the system like that. Yeah. I had to get out of it to get my optimism back again. But I think it's one way of getting optimistic is to seek out those examples of, you know, it working because, you know, and I know lots of individual teachers connect with me who are out there doing this work off their own bat because they believe in it and having great success. So there's a couple of teachers down in Dallas that I connect with regularly. And one is a high school teacher and the other one is teaching in the elementary school. Mm-hmm. And they have become partners in engagement together because they both share a passion for the continuum and my work. And independently, they have gone about kind of doing this work with their students, but then also looking for opportunities to collaborate because they're driving as teachers, right? Driving this work forward. So they get the high schoolers to go down and teach the fourth graders all about the continuum, all about engagement. And I loved the images. And my favorite bit about that story was one of the high school students, he was probably about 10th grade, maybe. When they left, he said to his teacher, that was literally the best thing I've ever done at school. When can we do it again? So, you know, we don't underestimate the power of bringing the kids in and positioning them as experts in this engagement space, too. So, and that collaboration has kept on going. So then the fourth graders went down and taught the first graders what they know about engagement. Mm-hmm. And I said, that's fantastic. Now your next job is to move it back up the chain because the first graders have something to teach everybody. The fourth graders have something to teach everybody. So it's not just, it doesn't just come top down, right? And so that's what they've done now. They recently sent me some pictures where they met up again, the fourth graders and the high schoolers, and the fourth graders taught what they have learned. And together they put together this engagement playbook, all the things that they've learned about their engagement and a whole page of top tips for teachers on how to get us more engaged. Now, when I see things like that, that gives me enough motivation to keep going for quite a while because then I think, okay, I'm not too far off the mark. Okay. Actually, it is possible. I'm not living in fantasy land.
Yeah. Those are great examples. Tell us how, if How accessible are you? Can you be? I'm sure you're incredibly busy if you're working all over the world. How do people follow your work besides reading your book, Reimagining Student Engagement? Tell us about how to order the book, how to stay in contact with you or follow your work.
Well, the book is on Amazon and all your retailers. Just Google it and you'll find it in lots of different places. So that's an easy one. In terms of connecting with me, I am on Twitter, Dr. Amy Berry. I'll share that link with you when we finish. I'm on LinkedIn. Sometimes a lot of school leaders or people at the system level like to connect on LinkedIn, so I'm on there as well. Stay tuned. I will share all of my new findings from my new research study as they come to be.
That'll be
and
fun.
I'm also working on a new book, so, you know, stay tuned for that as well.
Oh, boy. That'll be exciting. Well, thank you again for being on the show today.
Thank you.
As always, thank you for checking us out at The Peg Doesn't Fit. We appreciate you listening. You can find us on Twitter at The Peg Doesn't Fit. You can find me at Ryan D. Bartle 1.
And my personal Twitter is at Eric J. Steven. You can also email us at thepegdoesn'tfit@gmail.com or leave us a voicemail at anchor.fm/thepegdoesn'tfit.
Drop us a 5-star review on iTunes. Tell your educator friends or family, anybody. We'd love to hear from you.
All right. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you next week on The Peg Doesn't Fit.